Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Yes, it is. This is the Minnesota Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Scott Wolmering. Ryan O'Neill, our proud leader, is actually out today. This is a time of year where he does his benefit a charity Christmas concert. Two today from 2 o'clock to 7 o'clock. We'll get you the information if you want to provide that. If you've not caught this is the Minnesota Real Estate Show. We talk everything real estate and mortgage as it relates to the Twin Cities and Western market. We have got some great people on the show today. Mike Overson with Luminate, one of our co-hosts, he is here. We're going to talk everything financing with him. And Corey Schmiedeberg with Midwest Money Management. And he is actually our financial guru, which normally he would just be involved in a segment. But when he's on, I love his input so much. I think we're going to read his little disclaimer so he can join the conversation through the whole show.
So we have Corey Schmiedeberg here as a financial services specialist, certified tax specialist, and an accredited investment fiduciary. He is the vice president and partner of Midwest Money Management, located at 17316 Kenyon Avenue in Lakeville, Minnesota. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services offered through J.W. Cole Advisors, Inc., Midwest Money Management, and J.W. Cole Financial. And J.W. Cole Advisors are unaffiliated entities.
Yes, 612-294-6949 is how you can join the discussion. At the beginning of the show, we talk a couple updates. We talk a little bit about the mortgage update, what's going on in Twin Cities. You can text us at that number, by the way, 612-294-6949, or you can call in if you are brave enough to go on air with us. We love your questions throughout the entire show. Welcome, guys. Let's talk maybe first a little bit about what's going on mortgage-wise.
Sure. And I'm curious to get Corey's feedback on this as well. So rates are steady. So if we look at the last really 6 months, interest rates have not wavered that much. And that's the consistency that we've been looking for. If we rewind to last year around this time, I mean, we were in a 2 month span, we were ranging from 7% down to 6%, back up to 7.25%, back down to 6%. And it was kind of that bouncing around, that made it a little tough on our market. But this consistency that we've seen lately has been really nice. And I think we're going to continue to see that consistency move into next year. But the thing that caught my attention this week was I Googled mortgage rate forecasts just to see like what some of the entities out there were saying. And so the report that I was looking at had Fannie Mae was on there, National Association of Realtors, Mortgage Bankers Association, Wells Fargo, National Home Builders Association. So a lot of just national entities, right? Take a guess at what they thought, what the range was between all six of them, what the range was for their average 30-year fixed interest rate for 2026.
I would say it would be 0.25%.
So 0.25% lower?
I just thought you meant the range between all of them together. I thought they'd all be about 0.25% off.
So what do you think the average 30-year fixed rate was within those six people?
With top-tier credit, I would say it would be 6.
I'm going to say 5.5.
So for 2026, the lowest that one of those entities predicted was 5.9. The highest was 6.4.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So we're right in the 6.25, yep. Right? Okay. So guess what it was for 2027?
I think, frankly, with all the hip above with the new administration, there's a lot of talk about him really going after home value, you know, making homes more affordable, and there's a lot of tricky ways to do that. But I would say that it's probably 5.5.
Okay. I'm going to stick with the 5.5 as well.
Okay. For 2027, it was 5.9 to 6.3.
Oh, wow. So just basically
the same.
Which surprised me. I expected, like what Corey was saying, I expected like at least by 2027, like there's some predictions that it's going to be 5.5, 5.75 or something like that. And really, the predictions are almost exactly the same from those big entities for 2026 and 2027. So that kind of surprised me this week, and I'm like, do I agree with that? Do I not agree with that? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to feel about it.
Well, I think there is a lot of unknown. You know, we've talked about on this show forever. I mean, you know, obviously politics is politics, and hey, we're going to lower home interest rates and whatever. And we've been really clear that I don't care if you're God or the president himself, You don't control home interest rates. A free market controls home interest rate. Whether you're God or the president yourself, you don't control home prices. A free market controls home prices. Now, with that said, you know, when you do get an administration that is really being pushed to attack affordability, which they are, there are ways that you can artificially drive down interest rates. So the unknown, I think, is do they start buying mortgage-backed securities? Do they, you know, what do they do to actually get interest rates down? That's probably the unknown of 2026, the way I see it.
I would agree with that. So if you just kind of just let nature take its course, if you will,
you're going to be 5.9 to 6.3%.
You're probably going to be right where they're saying it, right? And if something, you know, if they step in, and like you said, if they start pumping money into the mortgage market, which is buying mortgage-backed securities, that's when we'll see the 5.5s and 5.25s come around.
And affordability is a relative thing, right? I mean, if rates go down, prices go up. If prices go, and then the converse, right? So we're talking about really the biggest thing is the affordability for people that would do like they did a few years ago and refinance, right?
That's
I mean, that's where the biggest opportunity for the affordability would come in. I'm still not sure it solves the problem for first-time home buyers or people moving from that entry-level home to their second home.
No, they don't. And that's what we've talked about on the show all the time. What we want to have happen in real estate is exactly what's been happening for the last 2 years. 3%, 4%, 5%, 6% appreciation, depending on your price point. Interest rates coming down from 7 to 6.5, now 6.25, maybe 5.9. Because what that does is it at least encourages people to get back in the market. But rates drop to 3.5, your $400,000 house is now 475. That doesn't do anything for anybody. And then you're in that four-month period we had back in 2022 where, yeah, great, you got a 2.7% rate, but you paid 60 grand more for your entry-level house. So right now you can't sell what you bought though. Now you've got a comfortable rate, and that's awesome. Live there. But just understand when you're doing that, you're not going to turn that house because you were paying for the rate. We don't want that. We just want a nice little solid, balanced market, which is kind of what we've got.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole affordability thing, I mean, I don't know what the right answer is there. You know what I mean? There's a couple different ways you could do it. But like Corey said, I mean, it's kind of like a teeter totter. You're going to gain on one side and lose on the other. So it's like, well, what's the better side to push down? You don't know.
Yep. That's right. Hey, guys, we're up against our first break. We kind of blew through that segment pretty quick. When we get back, we are going to talk about the real estate market itself. And get into to all of that when we come back. 612-294-6949. This is the Minnesota Real Estate Show. Hey, welcome back to the Minnesota Real Estate Show. This is Scott Wolmring with Mike Overson and Corey Schmiedeberg. We are talking everything real estate and mortgage related. Before we get into the fun stuff of real estate, do want to let you know that Ryan O'Neill, who's our fearless leader, our co-host on the show, every year does a concert where all the money to the concert goes to the O'Neill Foundation. If you haven't listened to the show before, the O'Neill Foundation is a foundation that Ryan started with his brother, where they help local families literally on a weekly basis, like 2-3 families a week that don't have a place to live, their car hardships that they incur. Every dollar goes back to them. It is an incredible organization. So if you're feeling friendly and frisky with your money this year, you could never put it at a better place. It's O'NeillFoundation.org, I believe. Is that the website?
Correct. Yep.
Yep. And then PianoBrothers.com is how you can actually go and sign up to go to the concert. There's one today at 2:00 and one to 7:00. You got the info there, Mike?
Yep. Yep. So Ryan did mention to us this morning that they do have tickets available for both shows. So the shows today are at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. at the Edina Performing Arts Center. All you have to do is go to pianobrothers.com, and you can get your tickets there and see what's available for either of the shows. So, again, it's 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock today at the Edina Performing Arts Center. Go to pianobrothers.com to get your tickets.
Yeah, it is a fun family event, really entertaining, trust me. It is one of those, I always call it, it's an O'Neill kind of night, just kind of fun and friendly and everybody gets along and hugs and it's that kind of night. So go to the concert. You'll love it. And then all the proceeds go to, help struggling families in the area. So that's cool. So let's go ahead and get into the market numbers, the real estate numbers for this week. It's typical again, what we've kind of seen for the last 2 weeks, new listings decreased. These are year over year numbers. So last year at this time versus this year at this time. So new listings decreased 2.1% to 835 new listings. Pending sales decreased, that's accepted purchase agreements, by 8.8% to 656. So again, what that means is the entire Twin Cities last week, 856 offers were accepted. Inventory decreased 1.4% to 9,093. I think we were at 9,800 like 3 weeks ago. So again, that's a typical typical deal. Median sale price increased 2.8%. That's that slow appreciation we want to see, to $386,647. And that's kind of what the market is doing. The number that sticks out to me, Mike, and you guys can comment on it. We talk about it every year. If you're around that 95 to 10,000 homes in December, that typically translates into about 6,500 to 7,500 homes entering the spring market. Well, let's just call it the second week to third week in February. Balanced market in the Twin Cities, equal amount of buyers, equal amount of sellers, is about 18, 19,000. So when you're at 6,500 homes, that is not a lot to choose from. Lots of pent-up, build-up demand for it. That's when we get the 10, 15 offers on everything moving in the spring. And, Mike, this one looks like the same thing.
It'll be, yep, it'll be a repeat of the last however many years.
Three years.
3 years that we've seen this. And so here's what's going to happen. If you're making offers now, if you're out there looking at a home, you can potentially get maybe a little bit off the price of that house. Maybe you can get the seller to pitch in to help pay some of your closing costs. You might be able to negotiate some terms like that. And you're going to have another few weeks where you're going to have that luxury to be able to negotiate some things out with the seller. Now, once we get past the Super Bowl, right? Super Bowl marks the spring market, so that's the official start there. As soon as we cross that barrier there in time, you're going to see that go away.
Correct.
You're going to see more buyers come out. You're going to see more competition on the buy side. Sellers are going to see that. They're going to have more showings on their homes. They're going to have more offers to choose from. And you're not going to have the luxury of being able to negotiate certain things out as a buyer in that market. So if you are out in the market now, you still got time, right? Take advantage of it, because now you're going to get your best deal. Once we get past the Super Bowl, just know that the game will change a little bit for you.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I've got a client I'm working with right now, under 400,000 south of river. So Eagan, Rosemount, Farmington, Lakeville, Burnsville, and Apple Valley. Right now, there's 144 homes for them to look at. Single-family homes under 400 grand. 77 days on market, 65 days on market, 48 days on market, one or two price reductions. Okay, we go out, we look, we go in for a second showing. We decide to write an offer, we negotiate our price. It feels like a normal market for this gal. She doesn't know any different. I'm trying to tell her, you got about 3 weeks to where all these 144 homes are gone. Literally, they don't exist anymore. And when the spring market comes where there's 6,500 homes, what we just looked at, that we've now looked at for a second showing, has five offers on it, and you have to run back. It's not fun. So if you are a buyer with nothing to sell right now, we preach it all the time, you basically have now till kind of second week in February to be able to actually get a deal, if you can get a deal in this market. That is the time where you can, like Mike said, closing costs paid. You can put a closing date that you want. You don't have to close in 3 weeks and end your life so bad. So it is that way. And if you don't think that's true, guys, it just is. So if you're out there and you're in this situation, take it to the bank, buy something right now, because you will not like it in about 6 weeks.
So why are people not buying homes then right now?
Well, I think it's a typical that we kind of see in a real aggressive market. My neighbor's home sold in June with 15 offers on it. It was on for 45 seconds, and they got 20 grand over. And so people being sellers start to kind of pull at that next price point. Okay, they sold for this, so we're going to go here. They sold for this, and so we're going to go here. So then eventually what happens when you settle in right now, you have got a lot that aren't overpriced drastically, but 5 grand, 10 grand, because they're trying to get that extra number, and the market pushes back. Interest rates aren't at 3%.
Yep.
You know, it's been at 6. They can wait. They've seen this game. You know, we haven't had some drastic thing, happen where they have to jump in. So you get a little bit of pushback. everybody pulls their stuff off in November and December because it didn't sell. They go back in the spring with a more realistic mindset because they've already been through some pain, and then boom.
Yeah, that's my anecdotal take too. Like, I still am on a search through your guys's team, and most of the stuff that comes on is all the stuff that's been on
and they
are overpriced,
right.
And they probably, for whatever reason, don't want to lower their price, or they do just very little.
Well, and most of it is a misunderstanding. It's very, very hard. That's why we talk on the show, if you've listened. Make sure that you really, really, really trust your real estate agent. Not that they're a trustworthy person, but that their math on the way that they're going to have you do things is in your best interest. So, for example, if your home is worth $365, your list price is $350. Very hard for sellers to do. Wait a minute, we're worth $365. Correct. That's the top end of what you're worth. So if you go $365, there is a real definite possibility that it's not going to sell at $365. Because why? Because people think, well, I don't want to write $365 because I'm going to have to write $380. Well, they don't, but that's the mindset. So they don't write. Now you get a couple 3 weeks shop worn where it's not sold. Now everybody thinks there's something wrong with your house. Also, when you go $350,000 and $1 list price, you just lost 28% of your buyers. So when you go $350,000 in a normal market, let's say you're adding 15 more showings, 4 more offers. That is worth one heck of a lot more than trying to get in at a $365 list price. You might get $370,000, $372,000, $375,000
mm-hmm.
because you have 10 offers on it instead of getting 2-3 weeks on the market, which kills you.
And that's typically because people search in $50,000 chunks.
That's
so
right.
So the people looking for $300,000 to $350,000 are going to see your listing at $350,000. But then also the people looking for $350,000 to $400,000
right.
also see your listing there. So that's why at $365,000, you're catching one of those groups. At $350,000, you're catching the eyes of both sides
yep.
of that group. So.
That psychology plays into the financial planning and investment side too. People always anchor to that high watermark.
Yep.
You know, if their accounts are worth X, it doesn't matter how the account did in aggregate for the year. They're always going to anchor to what that high watermark is. So like you said, if you say the house is worth $365,000, they're going to have that in the back of their head regardless of where you price the house,
that's,
you know.
That's so. Right. I'll give you a prime. This is a real-life example about probably 8 months ago. So $985 was my market on the house. So $985 was what it was worth. So we listed it at $985. $985, I had 23 showings on it in the weekend. 5 out of 5, love it, everybody loves it. Nobody's writing. And the reason they're not writing is they don't want to pay $1 million for it. And that's the mindset that they had back in June. Is, well, yeah, I mean, I like it at $985, but I don't want to pay $1 million. So everybody's settled. So literally after 2 days, we dropped it from $985 to $950, got 4 offers on it, got $992. So, you know, people are like,
yeah.
That's crazy. Like, it was not, no one had touched it at $985. People are competitive at nature.
Yep.
So now all of a sudden, and think about it, you also, especially in that price range, you don't want to always be the only one. So it's like, well, at $950, now there's 5 offers on it. Oh, well, this must be worth it and probably more. I'm comfortable in going more. Where when you're at $985 and it's been 2 days, now it's been 3 days, which doesn't seem like a lot of time, people are like, oh, maybe it is a little aggressive. Maybe it's not. So it's positioning more than it is pricing.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, what would you say for the sellers out there that have a home on the market? How many showings do they need to go through and not get an offer on, and then now they got to do a price drop? Because that number will change based on the market, right?
That's right. Yep. I always use 10. Through the years, I've gotten more to about 7. If you have 7 showings and you don't have an offer, you got a pricing issue. And you don't want to wait because you don't have to. So back in the day when we didn't have all the information at our fingertips, you didn't know. So you might spend 30 days figuring out your price, getting it positioned. Now I can look at the analytics at day one. And I can be like, we had 800 people save your home as a search. We've had no one save it as a favorite, and only 20% of the people that have it saved out of the 800 even engaged. We don't have to spend one more day trying to figure it out. The consumer, whether they're buying a bike, a motorcycle, or in this case, a house, doesn't like what we're pimping out. So let's get it changed. I mean, that's the information we have right now, which, you know, 15 years ago we did not have. And we will continue this discussion. Man, that flew by, but we're up against our second break. 612-294-6949 is how you can join the discussion. When we get back, we'll get more with Corey Schmiederberg and Mike Overson. Thanks a lot. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Minnesota Real Estate Show with Scott Wolmring, Mike Overson, and Corey Schmiederberg. We're here for your questions, 612-294-6949, either by text or join us live on air if you want to join the discussion. So we've been talking a lot about real estate, and this always, that's why I always like having Corey on for the entire hour. Real estate and the investing industry kind of go hand in hand a lot of times, or they, you know, they merge together well. So what's going on in your world? What do you think is going to be happening over the next? We were just doing kind of a 26 and 27 predictions with this new administration in order through their first year. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it going to be great? Is it going to be horrible? What do you think's happening?
I have no clue what I do. It's a good segue, though. And this is an invitation to radio listeners and certainly to our clients. But at the end of January, if you go to our website, MidwestMoneyManagement.com, and go under events, we have our forecast past and present. It's our big client and prospect event for the year. It's at Brackets in Lakeville, and we'll go over all this. So we'll do a deep dive on what happened in 2025, what the experts said, you know, economically, globally, politically, market-wise, all of that, how it actually played out against what they said, and then look at their predictions again for 2026. So, and what's amazing is that the guy or gal that nailed it the year before is completely wrong the next year.
Isn't like that funny?
So when Adam always says, Adam's my business partner, Midwest Money Management, our president and founder, he always says he's the world's foremost expert on his own opinion. So you know, we can have our opinions and things, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it would. Well, it's like, you know, how many times, we get asked the same question all the time. Scott, what's the housing market going to do in the next year? You know, I think it's going to do this. What do you think it's going to do in the next 5 years? I'm like, I have no idea. You know, I mean, you can get a little bit of a prediction on, we look at numbers enough and we've done this show for, you know, 20 plus years. And so we're used to kind of seeing, you know, how things move, you know, within a range, but you don't know. I mean, you know, we didn't know we were going to hit COVID. You know, it's like, you have no idea what's going to come up that can change everything overnight. And I would think in the finance industry, it's similar.
So one of the things, our mission statement is to provide our clients with the knowledge, tools, and confidence to feel comfortable financially today and secure about tomorrow. The beauty of that and the cool thing about how we do things is we don't have to worry about predicting the future. You know, we can have our opinions and everything, but our investment management strategies are all tactical. We ask our clients to give us discretion. We can act in real time. It doesn't matter what we read in the paper. It's all process driven. We also talk about controlling the things we can control. You know, we can do tax planning. We can control how much a person puts away. We talk about financial planning as it's not an exercise in having the perfect or best financial plan. It's having a financial plan that allows you to adapt as life unfolds. So if you lose your job, you get sick, you get divorced, the economy crashes, you know, I mean, a myriad of things, having you in a financial position where you can weather any storm that life throws at you. And so that's how I would answer that question of what's going to happen next year. It doesn't really matter as long as we have a sound plan in place for you.
You know, I had a question for you. So, and I know that you're not going to be able to give an exact answer, but from your very, very high end asset people, you know, your, lack of a better word, your richest clients.
Yep.
What percentage of their portfolio normally do you see that involves real estate, not just their primary resident, but additional real estate of any kind? What do you see?
Ooh, now this is going to be kind of an off the cuff. So obviously they have their primary resident. I would say out of that group, probably about 20 to 25% have a secondary property.
Yeah.
We do keep the metrics on our top clientele, and off the top of my head, I would say it's probably in that 20 to 25% category. Have a summer home, have a vacation place, a place down south. You know, what we do see more is them having the flexibility to to move, though. They're more apt to, you know, buy a place down south, have a place here, maybe sell their place here, whatever. Yeah. So they are movable, though.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. I that was kind of the number I always kind of thought in my head. You know, like, you know, I've got five kids, and I've said to them, you know, obviously they're all plugged in with you, but said, you know, I would look at it if I could rewind time to back when I was 27 years old, I would have made a goal to purchase, you know, one investment property every year to 18 months. You know, just have another one. You know, Ryan O'Neill plan. You know, I mean, just, you know, you buy one every year. Now you're 25 years later. Everything's paid off. You never had to make a payment on them, or very few if you had a rental that wasn't in there for a while. So I would think it would be there. It's one of the most misunderstood areas, I think, though. It seems riskier. Obviously, you can have ebb and flows. And we've talked about Ryan with all of his investment properties. He bought them between 2003 and 2005. If you could literally pinpoint the worst 2 years to ever buy investment property, you paid absolutely top value in 2003. By 2006, they were basically in half.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd be like, well, that's why I'd never do it. It was a horrible way. Well, it's not, because like we always talk about, it's when you exit. They still cash flow. I mean, that's how you base it.
Yep.
Whether they go down by 50% or aren't worth anything, they still cash flow, and that's why you bought them. And they still do. And so markets come back. So, again, fast forward 25, 30 years later, all the properties are paid for. You know, so it was a good investment.
Yeah.
But it is scary to people.
Yeah, and I'm a huge proponent for portfolio diversification. I think we're, again, back to opinions, and I have my opinions. I think the scary part is the people that have no business investing in real estate, and they go grab coffee with a few buddies, and they're like, hey, you know, I bought a place, you should buy a place, and they can't even afford their home.
Yes.
And they're out levering themselves up 2-3 times to buy investment real estate because it sounds sexy. It's the same thing with stocks. You know, people talk about individual stocks. There's sex appeal to it. It's fun. But the vast majority of people have no business doing some of that stuff as well.
Well, that was the model back in the early 2000s. Was because you could buy property with zero down out of your pocket, you know, through about 2004, and so it was leverage. You know, you buy a property, it goes up in value. You pull 80 grand out of that property, you buy two more properties. You pull 100 grand out of those two properties, you buy four more properties, and that makes sense until life hits, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden those properties lose value. You're maybe tied to real estate in some way, so your income has drastically gone down, and now all of a sudden you have an exit problem because you can't exit. You bought a place for $400, it's worth $250, you can't sell it, and you've lost your job, or maybe you're not producing as much, and that's when bad times can click in.
Yeah, and that's one of the differences between a large real estate investment portfolio versus a more traditional stock, bond, mutual fund investment portfolio is if your traditional investment portfolio goes down in value, there's no carrying costs, there's no operating costs, there's no pressure. It's not costing you anything to have it. If you have a large real estate portfolio and it becomes illiquid, there are a myriad of ancillary costs that require income to maintain viability of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We were talking a little bit off air, you know, obviously Mike Overson, lender of the year, what was it, 2 years ago or last year? I can't remember. Time flies.
I think it was 3 years ago.
Was it 3 years ago?
Yeah.
But he's still extremely good. But yeah, lender of the year, Mike's the only person that we use. Money's always there. People love him. Incredible service. And you think when you listen, well, that should be the way it is. Well, I'm here to tell you it's not. And I'll give you just a real example of a closing I had last month. They had the file for 70 days. We're closing on the 5th. A day before closing, I get an extension for 2 weeks. Not a word. Hey, we can't close this. We got to extend it for 2 weeks. Well, of course, my spider sense is tingling all over the place. We're not doing that until I get more information. I won't bore you with all the details. The point is, this is a lender that a lot of people know about, one of your bigger ones. It's a subsidiary that was doing the loan, but basically one of the bigger ones. And they hadn't done anything on this file. They hadn't collected verification of employment. They hadn't collected pay stubs. They were signing addendums 2 days before closing that we had sent them signed 60 days ago. And so it did not close. Now, eventually, about 10 days later, it did. And in this situation, people's lives weren't completely turned upside down because of their living situation. But normally, you got a family packed up. House is completely packed up. Everything's in the truck. We're just waiting to close. All of a sudden, now it's not. It blows up. It happens a lot. It never happens with Mike. And that's why it's important to go with a local lender. And maybe talk about that, because, you know, when people hear that, they're saying, that's crazy. How can that even happen? Why would a company be in place that does it like that?
It's too easy to not give service and have zero communication when you're not in someone's market, right? So you got some XYZ loan officer that's in Alabama. Are you, if the wheels fall off the wagon, are you going to drive to Alabama?
That's right.
Because he's not returning a call. He's not returning an email. Are you going to drive to Alabama to be like, dude, what's going on here?
Yeah.
No. But guess what? If you have a local lender that's here, you can physically drive to their office if you needed to, right, and try to get answers. Unfortunately, it happens where communication is terrible. You're not getting any answers. You're blowing past a closing date. You don't know what's going on. The family doesn't know what to plan for. It's like, well, are we close? Are we talking a couple days? Are we talking where this thing's got to cancel and we got to go back on the market? Now we're talking 30, 45, 60 days.
That's right.
Right? So when you're not using local, it's too easy to just ignore the emails, ignore the phone calls. If a problem comes up, I'll just stick my head in the sand, and guess what? They're not going to come to my office because I live several states away. I'll just move on to the next one.
Well, it's the difference between, and I'm not going to call out this bank specifically, but you can think about the bigger banks, and you would think, well, bigger banks should be more solid. Well, the bigger they get, the less personal they get. You're dealing with more of a banking system than you are with an individual loan officer. If something's going wrong on a file, Mike picks up the phone, calls me and says, hey, here's what's going on. Can you help out this? I do the same thing. Or yeah, you want to yell at somebody? I call and yell at Mike. What's going on? But when you're dealing with the banking system, you don't even know who to yell at because you're not dealing with one person that's doing it. That person did this part. Now it's handed off to this part. And hey, we've done our deal. Sorry, it didn't close. That's kind of the, I mean, if Mike was ever like, hey, dude, sorry we didn't close, I would be like, yeah, that's not how this program works. You know, actually, speaking of programs, we are at our third break. So we will get back on this a little bit more with Corey and Mike when we come back. 612-294-6949 is how you can join us. This is the Minnesota Real Estate Show. All right, this is the Minnesota Real Estate Show. This is our last segment till the top of the hour. Still plenty of time to do any questions that you want us to cover. 612-294-6949, either by text or you can call us there. We are in that last 15 minutes. We were talking a little bit, Corey, about investments, portfolios, and the percentage of people that have real estate in. One of the things that I think, you know, and it's been kind of talked about, excuse me, over the last couple of weeks, where the administration is talking about giving newborns from whatever date to whatever date, mm-hmm. $1,000 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And whether you like that or not, it doesn't matter. But it is the thing that I always tell my kids. I'm like, you start investing when you're 20 versus starting to invest when you're 40 or 50. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's amazing. So maybe talk about that. And what is a good time for an investor to get involved?
As early as possible. If any parents out there with kids in high school, I'm not making this up. We didn't talk about this before you asked me that question. Yesterday at 9:00 in the morning, I had a senior in high school. He's going out of state for college in the fall. His dad brought him in. His dad's a client. He's on Christmas break. Yesterday was the first day of Christmas break. He came in and said, I want you to meet with the team at Midwest Money Management, find out about investing. Very simple, set up a Roth IRA for him, started putting money into it, and the math on it is astronomical. I've probably said it on this radio station before, but compounding interest in the way that it works was one of the mathematical things that even Albert Einstein was intrigued by and couldn't quite grasp or understand. So two little examples of that. Actually, I'll give one. It's the maybe you guys have all heard this, but if not, do the math on it. It's if you're going to hire somebody to do a job for you, and you can either pay them $250,000 for the year or pay them a penny the first day and double it for 30 days over the course of the month, which option are most people going to take?
Well, without doing the math, they take the 250.
They take the 250,
which would be the
right?
wrong,
which would be the wrong yeah. choice. If you take the penny, it's millions of dollars by the 30th day. So it's not even close. Get in as early as possible.
Very, very good. Say, we got a couple calls waiting. We'll try to get to them here. Jim, are you there?
This is Tim.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tim. That's all right. We do that all the time. Jim, Tim, but you're Tim to us. Go ahead.
Yes. Question for you. Looking at a pretty significant basement remodel project and thinking towards a home equity loan.
Okay.
And just your advice on that versus other options. And how do you choose the right organization to take a home equity loan from?
Great question. Mike, that's kind of right up your alley.
Yep. So home equity loan there. I got a great referral for you. So, Jim, you should leave your contact info with us. And I got a personal friend that does those that I can get over to you. And he would be the one I would recommend all day long on that. And the other question was?
He was just talking about he's doing a basement remodel, and he just wanted to know that he's talking about doing a refinance and what's the best yeah. way and how to go with it. So, yeah, I think connecting with someone would be great.
Yep, and I assume if you have a mortgage on your house, you probably refinance when they were down at 2.75%, 3% and stuff like that. So you probably don't want to refinance your first mortgage at all. Add that second loan, which is a home equity line loan or a home equity line of credit. My referral that I give to you will explain the differences between the two, and you can pick which one you want to go with.
Awesome. Appreciate it, Tim. Pete, are you still hanging there?
Oh, it's Pete.
Yeah, Pete, go ahead.
Yeah, on when you reach age 70 or so, how should you be balanced as far as stocks and bonds? And,
Great question, Corey.
Yeah, so you're talking about asset allocation at age 70. I hesitate to give a definitive answer because every person's situation is so drastically different. What I would encourage you to do is if you want, that's a question that I would have to answer off the air, like personally, given your personal situation. And if that's something you want to do, I'm happy to do it. You can find us online at MidwestMoneyManagement.com. We do a compatibility consultation. It's free, and I can get you all of that information. But it's just too difficult of a question to answer just based off of age. It really depends on what your needs are and what you have going on personally.
Very, very good. Well, hey, guys, we're in the last few minutes here. I think we might have one more call coming in, but while we got a little bit of time, maybe let's give everybody their contact info, and then you've got an end of the year deal that you want to talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, so again, you can reach us at MidwestMoneyManagement.com. That's our website. You can get all of our information on there. You can also call our office at 651-204-3000. When the gentleman said age 70, I thought he was going to lead right into one of my things, which is year-end stuff. Got a couple things to consider. Roth conversions, if you're in a situation where it makes sense from a tax perspective to convert some of your pre-tax retirement dollars to after-tax, that has to be done by the end of the year. You still maybe have a little time to do that. It could be beneficial for you. Talk to your tax preparer, your advisor. Also, required minimum distributions. This is a requirement that at age 73 now, and it's graduating up to 75. It's changed a lot over the last couple of years. But your pre-tax retirement accounts, you have to take a required minimum distribution each year based off of the prior year's account value. And if you don't do it, it's a 25% IRS penalty. So if you're a do-it-yourselfer, make sure that you're keeping track of your birthday and your required minimum distributions.
Very cool. Mike, what do you got out there? What should people be doing if they want to get ready for the spring market or they're in the market right now? What's their best order?
I tell people it's kind of like investing, right? It's never too early to know where you're sitting at. And what I do for most of my clients is I start with just a soft credit pull. So then you don't get that hit to your credit and your credit score doesn't drop and stuff like that. So it gives us all the information we need to say, okay, here's where you're at today. on the loan side of things. You might be sitting completely fine, and guess what? Great. Just stay the course then. Whenever you find that house, you're going to be ready to go. But if there's something we need to work on, maybe we can improve your credit situation a little bit. Maybe you don't have enough length of time on your job or something like that. Well, now we can put a plan together to say, okay, let's do these next things, right? Let's do these 1, 2, and 3 over the next month or two, and then you'll be ready and ready to go to get out there and start looking at houses when the spring comes around. So plug in with us. It's never too early. It's just nice to know where you're sitting at today, and we can plan from there.
Yeah, and you know, when Tim's call came in, and I'm assuming that this is the case for him, this is when you want to do a basement remodel. It sounds like he lives there. He's going to do a remodel, take a little bit money out of his equity, and finish it, live and enjoy it. That's when you do a basement remodel. You do not do a basement remodel to sell your house. If you do it perfectly, you'd make no mistakes that anybody on the planet would ever want to buy in your new basement. You're going to get about $70 for every dollar you put in. So it is not something you do to sell your house. One of the probably I see it all the time. People do it because they think they can do it cheaper. It never works out. You don't need to do it. Leave it unfinished. But in his case, finish it, figure it out. Great. Actually, we're up against the end, man. The show's here quick. Again, 612-294-6949 through the week. MNRealEstateShow.com is how you can always get a hold of us. We're not going to see you before Christmas, so have a great Christmas. Have a great Hanukkah. Happy holidays. Enjoy it with your family. Be safe.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.